Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, our second adventure in the road trip series. Today, Eileen LeBlanc takes us on a tour of Huffman Prairie. We'll take a dance class with students from Stivers School for the Arts and more poetry and politics in this week's Why So Weekend. Up first, last week we let you know about the Laramie at Sinclair Project, a series of events put together by Sinclair Community College and other groups centered around the Laramie Project, a play that deals with the 1998 murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming. Events included workshops, readings of the play, and lectures by Greg Perotti, an associate writer on the Laramie Project. On Thursday night, several hundred people gathered at Garden Station for a diversity walk and candlelight vigil and to hear from event organizers and city and community leaders. Robin Hoops is a professor at Sinclair and says organizers consider the Laramie at Sinclair Project a big success.
Yeah, I think it exceeded my expectations. Stephen Skiles, chair of the theater department, had the idea to have some events centered around the Laramie Project. But we needed money to do all that, plus have other events. And so we wrote a cultural grant that Sinclair College supported, which I was very happy about because it shows a commitment on the part of Sinclair towards diversity and specifically with regard to their GLBT students. And we worked for a year on the events and tried really hard to put together different kinds of events that reach different kinds of sectors of the population, whether it's students or in the community. And we had a lot of help along the way. And I think it's been fantastic.
Hoops is also a faculty advisor for the Bright Signal Alliance, a student organization that played a big part in organizing the events. Part of their mission is to make sure Sinclair College is a nurturing learning environment for everyone, including LGBTQ students and allies.
Imagine all the people living life in peace.
The evening got underway with a music performance from two students at Centerville High School, and then perhaps one of the most moving speeches of the night from Bright Signal Alliance member Stetta Tahar. She's 17 years old.
In between the time that I was born to right now, we have come to matter. Before 1969, there were no laws protecting LGBT people and no national organizations supporting us. In 1993, Don't Ask, Don't Tell became law. A year later, I was born. And in 1996, the Defense of Marriage Act was signed by President Bill Clinton. It wasn't until 2009 that sexual and gender minorities became protected under the Matthew Shepard Hate Crime Prevention Act. Yet here we are in 2012, openly celebrating diversity, mourning our losses, and reflecting on the hard path it took to get here. I may be too young to enter Club Mask, but I'm finally old enough to give a voice to those who are afraid to come out of the closet. Figuring out that you are different, and then having to announce it to everyone, can seem scary, especially when you are young. Sometimes it feels like nobody understands. But take a look around you. Everyone you see here is an ally, and we are all here for you. We want to give you a place where you can feel at home and belong. You will always find somewhere in UD Spectrum, Sinclair's Bright Signal Alliance, Wright State's Rainbow Alliance. You have PFLAG, Youth First, and the Trevor Project. You have Dayton. Hate is not a Dayton value, and bigotry will not be tolerated. And to those who say we need to change, I say to you, you're right. We do need to change. We need to change how the public sees us. To people that think they can ask a girl like me, to a man like that, to that happy same-sex couple over there that we need to change, I say to you, we are here, and we're staying. But no longer in hiding, no longer in the closet, and no longer ashamed of who we are. We live in a country now that has equal marriage rights in 8 states. If this can all happen in less than 8 years, imagine what will happen in the next 8. We have shown the world that we are here, and we are not stopping until we get equal rights for everybody. It will get better. We matter.
Greg Pirotti, who co-wrote and produced the original Laramie Project, also spoke last night. Here's an excerpt from his speech.
So yeah, it's been an incredible time here, and I have to say, I've been really reflecting on the LGBTQ youth and the diversity groups, and I've been so struck by how passionate they are, and how political they are, and how engaged they are. It's really profound to see, and it gives me, who I can get a little cynical sometimes, a tremendous amount of hope to see the way that these young people are committed to creating change and actually confident that they are capable of creating change. You know, it makes me think of Matthew. And Matthew was a young person who was also really committed to creating change. And, you know, Matthew had a very troubled childhood or youth because he was often the victim of gay hate crimes and hate-motivated violence and attacks. And he suffered from depression for a lot of his young life. And when he came to the University of Wyoming, he felt like he had found a place for himself. He felt like he had found a home, and he was beginning to really emerge and become politically active and become incredibly engaged in this aspiration and this effort to create change and you know, turn hate to tolerance and tolerance to acceptance and acceptance to appreciation and celebration. And he was committed to doing that. And then he was murdered because he was gay. And so, you know, I keep thinking about him. And, you know, Dennis Shepherd says it in the play and in his testimony in the trial. You know, he says, I keep wondering the same thing I was wondering the night that I heard that he had been beaten so badly. What would he have become, you know? And I think what he would have become is one of the young people that I've seen here in Dayton. I mean, it's been incredibly moving to me to see how truly engaged they are. So I do think that what's happening here is incredibly important. I think that we are all allies here, and so it's good to gather as allies and to celebrate and to relax and to have symbolic gestures. This is a symbolic gesture. It's an opportunity for us to renew our inspiration, and it's an opportunity for us to enjoy each other and to celebrate the accomplishments that we've made. And it's also, you know, a way to rejuvenate so that we can get back to the sometimes rather mundane and grueling and irritating things that need to happen on a just an ordinary daily basis in order for change to really take place. And so I think, you know, we need these peak experiences. We need to always be happy about the change that we're trying to accomplish. And we also need to be willing to just step up and do the hard work and, you know, go to the council meetings and push for the change to actually take place in a legislative level as well and on a grassroots level as well. And so just thank you to Dayton for having me here, and thank you all for coming, and thank you to Matthew.
Greg Perotti of the Laramie Project. The Sinclair College Theater Department will present the play on Friday, May 18th. I'm Jerry Kenney. Coming up, more WISO Weekend. First, here are some more sounds from last night's diversity walk, including Gwen Johnson of Sinclair College, City Commissioner Nan Whaley, Mike Castle, pastor with Cross Creek Community Church, Beth Pratt with Wright State University, Stephen Skiles with Sinclair's Theater Department, and the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus.
Of friends of mine that graduated from high school with me at Roosevelt in 1964, and these two young men were gay and couldn't live in Dayton, Ohio. They couldn't live their lives in Dayton, Ohio at the time, and they had to leave and go elsewhere to live and to enjoy their time on this planet. Hate, profiling, stereotyping just cannot exist in this world if we're going to find peace and happiness here.
The people who don't understand the value of differences, who don't understand the richness that comes from variety, cannot be left behind. We have to work doubly hard to educate them to help them surmount their stereotypes, and to help them see the possibilities that exist in a community where we are all valued.
For you today to remind us that at the heart of the great religions of the world is a God that we know by many names, but mainly is love. And that's the kind of the universal, ultimate, mystical, magical experience of God, that it's rooted in this sense of love. It's interesting that the church...
On a community level, it's incredibly important because we need to not only honor Matthew Shepard, but all the changes that happen because of Matthew Shepard. As a contributing community member, we need to lead the way in opening up opportunities for people to discuss those issues. And diversity and tolerance is something that you can never discuss enough.
Oh man, this is unbelievable. We're walking down, I think, Jackson right now. We're about to hit Fifth Street. We've got the Dayton Police Department out with us. We've got several hundred people that are walking through the streets with us right now on a diversity walk. It's an incredible diverse population. There's an incredible, I think, feeling and tone to what we're doing. There's excitement about the awareness that we can bring just by doing something this simple. Just by doing something this simple.
Last week, we introduced a new series on WYSO, Road Trip. Radio producers from around the state will take you on 11 different audio tours contained in the new Ohio Guide. This week, we'll explore Ohio's Aviation Trail and a quiet, unassuming place near Dayton called Huffman Prairie. Our guide this week, producer Eileen LeBlanc.
Huffman Prairie doesn't look like much at first. There are no museums or monuments in sight, not many buildings either. In fact, it looks pretty much like a prairie. But this place oozes history in a way few places can. This is where powered flight became practical, where the plane could be controlled, and flights didn't end with faces full of dirt anymore. Huffman, which is near a trap shooting range, is also part of the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Park. And here we meet Ranger Bob Peterson.
It was a 84-acre, seven-sided, irregularly shaped piece of land owned by a man named Torrence Huffman. He was a banker on the west side of the city, and he gave the brothers permission to use his pasture for their experiments, provided they move the horses and cows out of the way first and bring them back when they were finished.
Orville and Wilbur Wright flew successfully at Kitty Hawk in 1903. But no one knew better than they did that the Wright Flyer was not the best plane ever built. So they came home to Dayton to work on control issues, including taking off and landing and being able to make turns. We hike out to the center of the field.
Many times when they were up learning how to make circles and turns, one of two things would happen. Sometimes the turn would get to be a little too sharp, the engine would die out. They would pull out of the turn as best they could and just coast in for a landing. At other times, they used this tree kind of as a turning point. Well, they'd approach the tree, they wanted to turn one direction, they'd find the plane slipping off in the opposite direction.
It's called adverse yaw. When you're preparing to turn and you drop one wing, you start to lose your lift and the plane slips off to the opposite direction. And Orville sees a big honey locust tree in his immediate future.
So, the honey locust tree is a dangerous tree. It has thorns. And I don't mean short thorns. It will have thorns that can be as much as a foot, foot and a half in length.
And he's not kidding. You could impale large vampires with these things.
Well, one day Orville is up practicing. He wants to make a turn, and it starts drifting off in the other direction. And he looks up, and the plane is headed directly for the honey locust tree.
He had options. He could crash the plane, he could jump out into the thorns and watch the plane crash, or he could try something he had never tried before. What do you think a Wright brother would do?
He thought, all right, I'm headed directly for this tree. I can't seem to pull out of this. But maybe I can force the airplane down and land before I get to the tree. So he tries pushing the forward elevator down, the nose of the airplane down. And as he does so, he finds he's regaining control. And so that tree helped them solve the last real problem they had in controlling and maneuvering their machine in the air. And what you see out on the field today are the descendants of that single tree that was here when Orville and Wilbur were flying.
You also see a reconstructed hangar, a catapult which helped them launch the biplanes, and the old interurban stop where they brought their plane pieces out here from the bike shop in Dayton. I'm Eileen LeBlanc. Don't forget to let the cows back out when you're finished flying for the day.
You can download a free audio tour from Bicycles to Moon Landings, Ohio's Aviation Tour, at seeohiofirst.org. The New Ohio Guide is produced by the Ohio Humanities Council, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for tuning in. Deshona Pepper Robinson began dancing with Dayton Contemporary Dance Company in 1992. She is now the dance director at Stivers School for the Arts. Stivers is gearing up for a concert next week and a full-on summer arts program for young kids. They get to experience music, writing, dance, theater, and other visual arts. I spoke with Deshona about the upcoming performance and the summer arts program at dance practice Thursday afternoon. She was putting some young dancers through their paces. Okay, so what are we doing here today? You got a room filled with dancers.
Filled with dancers. I'm going to take you into that other room as well. We're just going to scan this room. And if you even go into the theater right now, they're pulling down on Marley, and they got our lights going on. We have a rehearsal going on, a French Fun, one of the pieces that will go up next week for our concert Friday and Saturday. I guess that's May 11th and 12th. And we are working with a lot of the middle school kids who have really, really shown a lot of leadership. We were changing. We lost a lot of seniors last year. We're losing a lot this year. And our young kids are really, really just flourishing. So we're really, really proud. They open up the show, and we're just giving them a little more attention before the high schoolers get out.
So you've got a summer arts program coming up. Let's talk about that.
Yes, we do have a summer arts program called Dayton Summer Arts at Stivers 2012. And boy, do we have a lot. I'll give you the dates first. Monday, June 11th to Friday, June 22nd. At the very end of the summer program, there's even a huge concert for everyone. Everyone. Some of the different venues will have a music, writing, theater, of course, dance. We have amazing teachers. Even a guest teacher, Terrence Green from Cleveland School of the Arts. You just missed him. He just left 6 o'clock last night to get back to Cleveland. So we are extremely excited. He is the director at the Cleveland School of the Arts, and they come every other year and they perform on our show. Wonderful. So they'll be here Friday the 11th and 12th, and then Mr. Green will come back for our dance program during the summer.
You actually do a lot of outreach. You have teachers coming in from other schools and education facilities.
Yes, I do. And first and foremost, we do have adjunct here that do a lot for our community, so I do like to house them first. But then I go over to Dayton Contemporary Dance Company. I go over to the ballet, and some of the teachers are still yet to be determined, but we are excited to have a lot of the Dayton professionals to come with our babies and teach them dance and creative movement and music and lighting and all those other things.
Typical challenges this year?
Typical challenges. I think the summer program itself is, I think it's really realistic for a family to invest in this for 2 weeks. So I'm so glad that that's not a challenge. I'll start saying about that. But I think it's a challenge that I think will be full and just accommodating that. Last year we had a beginning class, for example, and then an advanced class. But we needed to accommodate that middle class of intermediate, and that was a little difficult. So I'm hoping that after this concert, I'm able to brainstorm and kind of collectively work with that, because we don't want to underserve anyone.
It's a lot of effort to undertake the summer arts program. What are the kids getting out of it?
The kids are getting everything. For one, at the end, it's a culmination of all of their techniques. But for most of all, it's about self-esteem and confidence. What they start with in the very beginning, we let them know, we can't teach you unless you know that you're beautiful. You know, look in the mirror and say you're beautiful, because then we're able to teach you. Just like that ceramics teacher is not able to move that clay without it being wet, we allow them to know that in the very beginning. So to see that transformation from Monday when they start all the way into the very end. And you know what? We're doing something different this year. We're even doing a placement class probably the week prior to the camp for dance, just so we can, you know, weed down on the insecurities that the dancers may go through of seeing, you know, new people and being in an environment that maybe they feel that's a little bit too hard or a little bit too easy. We can cut down on that the week before, so we don't even have to deal with that first and second weeks. We're basically teaching them how to dance, teaching them how to move, allowing them to love themselves even more, and just embracing of the bodies they're in.
I love the sculpting metaphor, and you're giving these young people confidence for the future.
Yeah, that's the main thing. I mean, I, believe it or not, low self-esteem. You know, I've been surrounded by all mirrors all my life. There's not even a mirror in my home, except for the one I brush my teeth in. But to go through this and be criticized, as an artist, you have to go through this, and you just toughen up every second. I get it. But some of our young babies aren't used to disappointment. So we have to teach that also. In our classes here at Stivers, and we'll do this in the summer as well, we pick the Final Four. I'm a basketball fan. My husband came here to play for UD, so I'm a basketball fan. And we do something called the Final Four. At the end, we pick out the Final Four that has done just an extremely great job on the particular combination. We pick out the four because everyone has done their best, but we also need to teach, guess what? Audition skills. So the kids are learning that too, that just because they try their best, they may not be at the very end for the Final Four. So, you know, they get more and more self-confidence. Like, I still did my best. I didn't get picked, but I did my best. I did my best. And then maybe by the end of the program, they are picked at one of that Final Four. Or we can, that's something we'll attain for the next summer and the next summer and so on and so on. But I think what's really good is that 2 years ago we had this program, and a lot of those babies auditioned for us this past January and April. I looked, some of them were skinnier and with more technique, and it was, oh gosh, it was wonderful to see what we want to do here. That's what we want. We want the kids to come here for the summer, learn, get excited, take a dance class, take ceramics, get into music, and love the Stivers environment. And then, you know, when they're able to, these were, you know, young babies, but then when they're sixth graders about to audition, they already know their environment. It's amazing. When we had our first pilot 2 years ago, phenomenal work. Sue Phelps, who is the coordinator, amazing woman, what can I say? She really did her homework. You know, before and after interviews with teachers, what worked, what didn't work. You know, different questions that you asked me. Did you see a problem? Did you see any or foresee any details that we lacked or that we want to make sure we attain before? All those things were nailed out, hammered out through dialogue, through discussion, through looking at other programs as well, you know, from Dayton Ballets to other programs I've taught in Cleveland, just to, you know, what works is work. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just got to make it better and make it roll. So there you go.
Deshona Pepper Robertson. The Spring Dance Concert takes place in Centennial Hall Friday, May 11th and Saturday, May 12th at Stivers School for the Arts, 7 to 9 p.m. both nights. Coming up, more YSO Weekend. Now back to practice and try to keep up.
5, 6, bop, boom, bop, and make the music. Oh, let me hear you. Oh, don't be shy. And that has to be turned out, that little flex foot. Mercy does that really well. She has to step out, Michelle, on that. Ah, go, shot. Oh! Not stiff, Jubilee. Get in there.
Coming up on YSO Weekend, Politics Ohio, but now we continue our series of readings from the Dayton Metro Library's celebration of Conrad's Corner. This morning we hear from a newer poet to the Miami Valley, David Allen Lambert.
First one's called Served by Destiny. For Destiny and Company at Stick and Chick. After 7 days' worth of weird shifting, planar drifting, depressive mania, and dissociation, I step from out to in, from dark to light, from cold to warmth, from isolation to interaction, and smile when I realize I'm being greeted and served by this diner's destiny. African curvaceous, American goddess, she's the first waitress in sight. It must be right to be here now. In the midst of everything changing again, exhaustingly after a year and a season of grieving, yet celebrating today, post hearing my first poem professionally produced and performed on National Public Radio. My heart racing, blood pumping hard, body pulsing with calories, first full meal in days feeding all my flesh, dulling my senses, evidenced by my ears' delight to the desperately upbeat adolescent music pouring from special ceiling speakers like oral rain to quench any disquieting ignitions of silence. Food inhaled, coffee sipping, mocha mint milkshake in the making. Other waitresses, satisfying their curiosity, reveal their own creative inclinations, kindred literary ambitions. As I scribble this poetic reproof, repriming my muse's well of patience with my passionate proclivities profane. And with a psychic ping, the song, this pen, this poem, and this place take my hand and welcome home my soul, lost to myself this week, restored as simply as sucking sweetness through a straw. And this one is for Conrad, called Storm Passes for Conrad for Asking. In an hour, in reply to an offhand request, I solidly typed the headlines of my whole life, without shame, with regard for my true name, holding the line holy, beyond sacred or profane, wholly mundane, entirely meaningful. As the keys drummed beneath my thrumming fingertips, I felt again how it all really happened, past tense. And here I am, still alive, still turning pages, still willing to be me. When I pressed send, my tears returned, a weeping of relief of relief, washing in this now time with calm trust in this new living. And that's when I realized I am on the other side of the storm. Thank you.
Poet David Allen Lambert on Why So Weekend.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Ellen Belcher, filling in for Emily McCord. Today I'm talking with Bill Hershey, the former State House Bureau Chief for the Dayton Daily News. Thanks for talking, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
Here it is, a presidential election year, and the Ohio Republican and Democratic parties both have had their dust-ups involving their leaders in that quadrennial moment when they're supposed to be at their most united. How important are party chairmen anyway?
Party chairmen are important, particularly in a presidential election year, because they do have to keep the party united. They have to identify their vote and then make sure they get these voters to the poll. It's the kind of the grunts do this work. It's not the multi-million-dollar television advertising, but in its own way, it's just as important. And in a close election, they can really make a big difference. I think most recently in Ohio, we saw that in 2004 with President George W. Bush's reelection effort. The Ohio Republican Party and the Bush campaign worked hand-in-hand to get all their voters to the poll.
Ohio Democratic Chairman Chris Redfern got a scare when several unions, including the United Auto Workers, came after him this year. But when the 66-member Central Committee voted this month, Redfern easily defeated his challenger. What was that all about?
Well, it could have been about what happened in 2010. That's the year Democrats lost everything but their shirt. But I really think it was more about 2014. Chris Redfern is a strong supporter of former Governor Ted Strickland, a Democrat. In fact, Strickland helped Redfern win the state chairmanship against Montgomery County's Dennis Lieberman in 2005. And if Governor Strickland or ex-Governor Strickland wants to run for governor again in 2014, Redfern's expected to back him strongly. And some Democrats think Richard Cordray, the former attorney general, would be a better candidate.
The Republican feud arguably has been more interesting because the coup organizers actually prevailed. And Fairborn's Kevin DeWine was ousted, and former Republican Chairman Bob Bennett was brought back. Bennett had groomed DeWine for his old job, but when push came to shove, Bennett sided with Governor John Kasich. What was the complaint?
Governor Kasich never was very specific publicly about why he wanted rid of Kevin DeWine. The most descriptive quote I had from him or heard about him was, quote, "I just think we need to have somebody that's going to unite everybody inside the party," and that goes back to the chairman's job to keep the party united, particularly in a presidential election year. I don't think it was that so much. It's nothing new. Chairmen of Democratic parties, Republican parties, always want to have their own person in the job. Kevin DeWine was not John Kasich's person, and he was suspect because he was good friends with John Husted, the Secretary of State, who used to be from the Dayton area. I don't think John Husted would challenge Kasich for the governor's nomination in 2014, but maybe Governor Kasich thought he would.
Kevin DeWine hasn't said what he's going to do next. Do you think he's just going to slink away?
No, he's not slinking. He called me up the other day to say, talk about all the conversations we've had in the past. And he said he was looking at some business opportunities. And he also is going to serve on the Republican National Committee as one of the representatives from Ohio.
You recently wrote a column talking about the challenges Chairman Bennett faces. What does he have to do?
He has to keep the party united. And he said that's not difficult because of the unified disdain for President Obama. However, there's one caveat. There's not that much enthusiasm, or so far we haven't seen that much enthusiasm for Mitt Romney as a candidate. So Bennett has to make sure that people at the local level are excited, that they're going to do the phoning, door knocking, and everything else that has to be done.
In that same column, you also wrote about the legendary Ohio Republican Chairman Ray Bliss. He went on to become National Republican chairman until Richard Nixon sent him packing back to Ohio. You're co-authoring a book about Bliss. Why was he important in Ohio political history?
Late political writer David Broder of the Washington Post once said that there were, he called the three B's, the important National Republican chairman, Ray Bliss, William Brock, who came along after Watergate, and Haley Barbour, who came along after Bill Clinton. And each of these people rebuilt the National Republican Party. Bliss rebuilt it after the 1964 Barry Goldwater disaster for the Republicans. He made the job a profession. He patterned his job after the industry leaders he knew at the Akron tire companies.
I've been talking with Bill Hershey, a longtime political journalist in Ohio. This was fun, Bill. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you. It's good to talk with you.
That's it for this week's edition of Why So Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks to all our guests, and thanks to you for joining us on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next, the Book Nook.